Welcome back to the third episode of Sofa Science. These may or may not have been filmed within the same 24 hours, and I'm just wearing a different jumper each time. It's Julia's jumper. I'm not naturally this patriotic.
You are that patriotic.
Am I that patriotic?
You're like English for the English.
Yeah, totally. So, hi, Julia. Who
Hello,
are
Sally.
You? What is your channel? Tell the audience. Jesus Christ. There will be cat interruptions throughout
there's
this
video. There's a cat here.
The cat can open the door.
Yeah, that's why there's a rubber band.
Oh. Third time lucky.
Take 27.
Yeah. Hi, Julia.
Hi, Zach.
Who are you? What's your channel?
Good question. My name is Julia Wild, and my channel is youtube.com/wildscience or That's So Science, depending on how you want to Google that.
Alright dudes, slime mold tends to get a pretty bad rap. It's slimy, it's weird, some people think it's gross, and it tends to be associated with the stuff that grows on your bread. But I actually think slime mold is awesome. So on today's episode, I'm going to give you a proper introduction. That's So
Science. And others may know you from...
I was on D News for a while.
How many years are you on D News for?
Just one.
Was it only one?
Yeah, it was only one.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So, first question is all first questions are. Mm-hmm. How did you get started?
Well, when a man loves a woman.
Okay. Yeah.
I really got started when I was really young and watched Steve Irwin. He was kind of my inspiration.
The Crocodile Hunter.
Yes, Crocodile Hunter. Crikey! If I can do its Australian accent really
Your
poorly.
Australian accent is just as bad as your English one.
I can try and therefore no one can criticize me. So I watched him a lot when I was younger, and then growing up I always loved science. I loved learning about the world, about rocks and volcanoes and clouds and the whole nine yards. And then as I grew up, I liked performing, I liked writing, but I still loved science and being a science communicator.
Performing is in acting.
Yes. So that kind of science communicating kind of combined all these things into one nice little package with a bow on it.
Mm-hmm. So then you studied what at university?
I studied English literature, but I also studied communications and art.
See?
And biology. I had like three minors.
So, okay, so
I was really ambitious. My degree is technically English literature, but because of the American system, I wound up with a ton of minors.
So why English literature and not science?
Ah, good question. I originally started out doing environmental science, but at my university, environmental science was like a double major in itself, and I didn't want to really limit myself to just STEM fields. I really like the combination of the humanities and STEM fields.
Mm-hmm.
So I was better able to combine everything I loved with a literature degree.
And then how did you go from English lit with a minor in biology to making science YouTube videos?
I graduated from college, watched a lot of YouTube. I'm a nerd fighter, and so loved the Vlogbrothers for a long time, and I really loved what they were doing, and I thought that was a really neat way to tell stories and to communicate. So I threw my hat in the ring and started making videos, really to keep my skills fresh while I was unemployed, ran out of college.
Okay, so what had you thought that your career was going to be?
I wanted to be a science writer.
Okay.
Yeah. But making videos was a way to kind of have an audience and have a reason to write.
So do you find that having an audience changes your creative process and your way of writing then?
I mean, really when you're writing into the void, you don't really know what's going to land or what's going to come across the way you intend. So having an audience, you get that kind of a feedback. So I think having a consistent, good, critical audience helps you become a better writer.
Okay. And you've kind of had two audiences because you have your own channel and you've had D News as well.
Yes.
So how do the audiences differ between the two, and how does that like change how you think about things?
I gained a lot of subscribers and a different kind of audience when I joined D News. And so it really didn't change all that much. But it definitely made me realize when I was writing a story, for instance, about heart disease or something like that, to not have too American of a perspective.
Okay.
You know, and use kind of facts and figures that are like 70% of Americans have X, Y, and Z, you know?
Yeah, I noticed that watching science channels based in America. Everything is so
America.
US-centric.
That's because we're the most important country in the world.
Just gonna highlight the flag there.
That's my sweater.
It is. Jumper.
Sweater.
And how did you get your job at Dini's? Was there like a standard job offer?
Oh, that's
like you saw an advert in a newspaper?
Yeah, I circled it with a red pen and called them up. Walked right into their office. No, actually, they found me. They were looking for a new host, and they decided to see what was already out there in the science YouTube world. And the producer of D News contacted me and said, "Hey, we like what you're doing. Would you like to come try it for us?" And I did a couple episodes with them one day, and they decided they liked me and I liked them, and we kind of fell in a little mutual sciencey nerdy love, and that was that.
That's history. Cool.
Yeah.
And you have to write many more episodes when you're doing something like a series for a big YouTube channel like D News than you do for your own stuff, where you can spend how long do you spend on your own videos?
It depends on how much I'm procrastinating. I can write an episode in a day if I really try, I'm really procrastinating. But usually I like to have a lot more time, a couple weeks to process things, do research, come back to ideas, and really refine it. But at D News, we had to write an episode a day. So that was 5 episodes a week, really.
How did you find writing an episode a day? Because I take months to write an episode. And it's just it's not that you're working solidly on it for months, but it's one of those things where you get your best ideas when you're not thinking about it.
Yes.
It's like you put it to the back of your brain and then you think about it when you're in the shower and like, that's the perfect solution.
Exactly.
You don't have that opportunity.
No, we don't have that luxury. Daily. No, and that was one of the my biggest pet peeve was I would, you know, sleep on an idea, but the episode has already been written and filmed. Mm-hmm. And then the next morning I'll get up and think like, oh, there was a better way I could have phrased that, or I could have brought in this idea instead, and that would have changed the entire feel of the video. Mm-hmm. But working with D News was really a lesson in letting go and really being able to shed my perfectionism, because a lot of my procrastination, as procrastination is a type of perfectionism.
Yeah.
Like, it's never going to be perfect, so I'm going to put it off as long as possible.
Mm-hmm.
So then when it's not perfect, I have an excuse. Like, oh, it could have been perfect if I had worked on it for weeks.
But I only had the option to work on it for a day.
Right. So it really was in a lesson of, like, doing your best with what you have and being okay with that.
Because there's not only writing a video every day, but there's coming up with a new video idea every day. So where on earth do you get your inspiration from?
Hey. Lots of different things. Random ideas we've been thinking about since we were 7, like, is your red the same as my red? Or the internet, we see what's trending, really, what people are talking about, what the latest research is, informed a lot of what we talked about at D News. D News, like, what's happening in the news? What are people talking about? But we really also try to have a decent amount of what we called evergreen topics, which are things like, why is the sky blue? Why are trees green? Or, you know, those kind of topics.
And you're talking a lot about we. Who is we? And what's it like working in a group rather than on your own?
Ooh, I really liked working in a group. I'm a very collaborative person, and I think the best stuff people make is when they're working with other people. So we was the D News crews. We had, Trace and I were the full-time hosts, a couple part-time hosts, and then we had a couple producers and editors. And so every morning we'd get together and have our little, I don't know if these are industry secrets, if I can talk about or not, but we'd have like our little morning meeting where we'd talk about what we wanted to write about. We'd do the research, write about it, edit it, fact check it, etc., and really having a lot of different eyes and a lot of different ideas floating around really made for higher quality content.
Mm-hmm. So that sounds fun. So then when you're making your own videos, do you miss certain aspects of that, or do you enjoy having the longer period of time, more creative freedom, and you having control of every single aspect, kind of feeding into your perfectionism?
I would like working in a group, but over a long period of time.
Okay.
So combine them. When I work by myself, if I have an idea, of course, I think it's the best idea, but it obviously might not be.
Yeah.
So I have no check against that. It's just me and whatever I think is best, which can be fun, but also kind of dangerous.
Yeah. And who is your audience for these videos?
My audience tends to be, my ideal audience is curious people of all ages. Sometimes it's high schoolers, sometimes it's college, sometimes it's 40, 50-year-old people who have a GED or whatever.
Have a what?
GED.
What's that?
It's when people who don't go to high school, when they don't graduate from high school, they can still get the equivalent certification.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that's another thing. So you said that's your ideal audience. Who is your actual audience?
Audience is 80% male, 20% female. I would also like a lot more, at least a 50-50 split. But being a science YouTuber, it tends to lean towards men. And I think that's true across various science YouTubers. So I would love more women to follow me, or watch, or just get involved in YouTube.
In terms of both making or just watching?
Both.
Why do you think that there's anything in particular? I mean, this topic has been discussed so much about women in science on YouTube.
I know.
What's kind of your very brief thoughts about why we struggle to have more women in YouTube? In science in particular.
I know. At first, when I first started, one of the big things was harassment. And the type of comments you get when people are hiding behind a screen and behind a username, people can say whatever they want to say. And it's people kind of pushing the boundaries of what's socially acceptable. So I can kind of understand that in that certain aspect. People love pushing boundaries, especially when they don't have their identity attached to it. But I think now, a couple years later, that it's almost... And I think it's true for a lot of YouTube right now, is that there's like these big heavy hitters at the top with incredible money, production value, content. They're just making really good stuff. And somebody who's just starting out with like an iPhone in a living room can't compete with that. So you think, I can't compete with that even like in production value. Maybe I could compete with that in like the writing or the content. But if their production value sucks, nobody's going to watch.
Yeah.
Or that's, you know, what some people...
Yeah, like. Why would anyone watch just two people sitting on a bed with a tiny little compact camera and a handheld microphone? No one will watch this kind
Nobody's
of stuff.
Nobody's going to watch this. Whatever. So that's like, you know, people kind of put themselves down or like stop themselves before they can get a chance to get in by kind of thinking these things. Because YouTube isn't... And this is my opinion, but I feel like YouTube is not as democratic as it used to be.
Okay.
I think with an influx of traditional media practices, it's become a lot less democratic.
Do you think that the influx of kind of traditional media and money into YouTube and big corporations has been an overall detriment to YouTube or an overall benefit?
Good question. I keep saying good question. I think YouTube started out as a really neat experiment into what people can make and what people want to see when they're not influenced by anything else. And by influenced, I mean influenced by money.
Yeah.
So once you bring in traditional media money, that changes the landscape drastically. So I think that has been a huge detriment, but I think there were enough innovators. God, I hate that word. I feel like such a tech asshole when I say that. Enough innovators early on that even though they might have a huge influx of cash or... resources.
Resources.
they've still managed to make YouTube something different from traditional media.
Okay. So if I was to hand you $1 million...
Oh, God, please do. Right now. Just hand it over.
What would you do with that in terms of your YouTube? Like, what things do you feel it's money that's limiting you?
Go on an extended vacation. A production value is one. My production value is not incredible. I don't even have lighting. I just use the sun. I just recently got a mic.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks, Amazon. Please pay me for saying that.
So you think you'd do the same stuff as you're doing now, but just make it look and sound better?
I'd want to do more stuff. I think it would free you up from making money elsewhere and from spending time making money elsewhere. I think that's a big reason why people do things like Kickstarter or GoFundMe or Patreon, is so then they have that liberty to make what they want to without having to have a day job. I would want to do a lot more field stuff. I mean, growing up and watching Steve Irwin and him being out in the field, I think there's a lack of those kind of stories on YouTube because YouTube does tend to be like people hanging out in a living room or in a bedroom or whatever. I mean, it's very domestic. So
because other stuff requires more funding.
Exactly. Things. Yeah.
And I mean, that's what YouTube doesn't have, for better or for worse.
Yeah. Unless you're partnered with GE.
Unless you're partnered with GE. You've now left E! News. What are you doing at the moment? Where are you? I'm going to be the embodiment of your fans. Oh my God, Julia, like, what are you... I don't know why they're from LA. Oh my God, Julia, like, what are you doing now? Like, where are you? And why aren't you making science videos?
Oh my God, thank you so much for, like, being my fan. I, like, totally appreciate that. What am I doing now? What is my life right now? I'm just... trying to reframe the kind of content I'm making. Because before I was making just a lot of nonfiction content, trying to reframe and retool the kind of content I want to make. Because what I connect with most on YouTube are personal stories and people, not necessarily facts or figures or anything. And I think that's one of the things that attracted me initially to science communication, is the combination of story and science.
Okay.
And I don't see a lot of that on science YouTube, because I love like long form scientific journalism where they follow around one scientist. And if you go and look at any great scientific creative nonfiction,
it, like, so what is kind of your inspiration? What would you say are the pinnacles of this is science communication done at its best?
There's a couple writers that I really, really love. Annie Dillard is one of them. Pilgrim at Tinker Creek is an incredible piece of science writing. John McPhee, also great. Barbara Kingsolver, her nonfiction is really great, and her stories are very personal. She'll talk about going on a walk or taking her kids on a trip or something and connecting that in some way to scientific ideas. And that's what speaks to me. And I think that's what speaks to a lot of people, so is having that human element.
It's interesting that all of your inspirations are writers then, rather than any kind of visual medium.
Yeah. I mean, initially I grew up with like Steve Irwin and Bill Nye, just like any other 90s kid. But I, you know, it's one of the reasons I have a lit degree. I do love writing and language and words. And I think words are really powerful.
And so why are you not focusing on writing? Why are you a YouTuber?
YouTube has an element of writing in it. The best YouTube channels do have the best writing. It's succinct and to the point. But I think the kind of stories you can tell through a visual medium really enhance the science if you're talking about an atom. And it's really hard to describe in words alone, but having a diagram definitely helps.
So do you find the process of writing for a written format, like a blog, different to writing for a video?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Very different. You don't have B-roll to fall back on. You have to have metaphors in writing for a blog or a magazine or anything that you can't have, or that you don't really need in YouTube.
Your most recent video is a coming out video.
It is.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
How did you find that? Because I was with you when you posted that
video. You were here for Pride.
Yeah. San Francisco Pride is amazing. What did you think? Like, why did you feel like you had to make that video? What did you think about the responses making to people now having seen the video? Because you don't make one of these kind of videos lightly. You will have been thinking about it for months.
Or years. I wanted to make that video for at least a year and a half, if not longer. It's something that's been on my mind for a long time, and it's a huge part of my life that, I don't know, I feel like a lot of science YouTubers focus so much on science and don't share any of their life, which is really interesting. And so I felt kind of weird sharing personal things.
Do you have in your mind a set, this is my personal life, this is my YouTube life, this goes in this category, this goes in the other?
Yep, definitely. Okay.
How did you come to that decision?
Naturally, okay. I think. There's a sort of sense of self-protection, I think, for a while.
Protection from?
Judgment.
Okay.
I don't know, to be honest. Ooh, that was so honest and truthful. We're getting into, like, therapy shit now. Yeah. Just, and there were some things that I felt like me telling a story about evolution or convergent evolution or whatever is not going to be influenced by my personal life any.
What did you feel about the reaction to your coming out video?
It was now three days in the past. 3 whole days. Yeah. I know. It's been generally pretty positive. A lot of people who have been super supportive, welcoming me to the queer community, even though I've been a part of it in my personal life for a number of years, but just not on the internet. And that was one of the reasons why I wanted to make the video now, was because I consume a lot of queer media on the internet, but I can't contribute to it in any way or be a part of that conversation in any way until now. So that's nice. A lot of people, I've gotten a couple messages already that are like, hey, I was watching your video and it made me realize something about myself. And so I had this conversation with this important person in my life.
Oh, that's cool.
And that's the reason why I did it.
Yeah.
Because I don't see a lot of my story in a lot of the queer media I can consume right now. So hopefully by telling my own story, that'll resonate with somebody else.
Yeah. And what video are you proudest of all the videos that you've done on any channel?
Oh, wow. I mean, this one was big, just because it was so personal. And scary. Nothing else has been quite that scary.
Yeah.
So on my own channel, I really like talking about women in the media or the state of women in STEM fields. So I have the gender bias in STEM fields video I was really proud of. Trying to put all those thoughts I've had on that subject in one place. Because I've gotten into a lot of arguments in real life about that topic. And so now I can just like whip out a URL and be like, watch this. Yeah. And then come talk to me. And then I love my fictional female scientist, Dana Skelly. I could talk about her for hours,
but that's... She really can talk about her for hours.
I like to. My poor friends. And then for G-News, oh, God, I had some great ones. The gravitational waves episode was really fun. That was one of the quickest turnaround we've ever had on a video. We got that done in under 4 hours, like researched, written, edited, fact checked, edited the video, published in a couple short hours. And that, in that, making that video, I really felt that sense of camaraderie and teamwork and coming together for like a common goal and like, yeah, we got this. Like, this is gonna be hard and challenging, but I had a whole team to work with and we all had each other's back. And it was just a really fun experience to do.
That's cool. It's nice being able to work in a team. That's something that I miss.
Yeah.
So I just don't get that.
I love it. I don't know. Nobody's like a full extrovert or a full introvert. I'm mostly an introvert, but I really like working with other people when I'm making things. I think it makes it a lot more enjoyable.
And final question. Yes. What is the one thing about you and science YouTube and science communication that you want people to know that you don't think they already know?
Ooh, about YouTube. I think that it's fun and it's not hard to do. So people who are interested in it and think they want to do it should do it.
Cool. That's a really optimistic note to end on.
Yes, because there's a whole community of people that I just love the science communication community, even like the YouTube community or the blog community or the loads of other people I've met who do science communication over the years in various platforms. It's a really great, enthusiastic, curious community, and I think it's a really lucky and fun community to be a part of. And so if you want to do it, you should do it. Join us.
And talking of join us, if people want to find you, I'm sorry, I am actually paying attention whilst also distracting the cat. If people want to find you, where can they find you?
I'm on most social media platforms.
What's your favourite social media platform?
I love Twitter. It's great for science communication.
It really is.
It really is. Talking to scientists or other communicators or community.
And what's your Twitter handle?
@Julia_SCI.
And what's your YouTube channel?
That's So Science.
And they're all going to be on the I and in the description. So yeah, thanks for having me.
Thank you.
And you're not safer. And I hope you enjoyed that. And see you for the next one, preferably without a very playful cat.